is time, ladies and gentlemen. It is time. I've been so amped for this podcast, man. I've been amped for this podcast all day, pretty much since last night, man, because I knew this was going to be a special one, man. Thank y'all for listening. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. I'm your man, Jay Hicks, here. And we got a lot planned tonight. Obviously, we discuss everything that's going on in the world of sports and music. We talk about basketball a lot on the podcast, if you're not familiar. And if you're any type of NBA fan, and if you're not living under a rock, then you know all about LeBron James and his impending free agency. And it's not even impending, it's here. It's his free agency. And everything that's surrounding that. And with me, if you follow the podcast at all, you know that, you know, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I have a certain connection with the team, with the Cavaliers, and you know, I have my own personal, not personal, but just as a fan, an experience with LeBron and all that. So we'll get into all that in a minute, man. But I've really been kind of putting off talking about hip-hop, and part of that is because there hasn't been a lot going on in hip-hop, and we actually did a album review, a Tale of the Tape, so hit up the website, hiphopsportsreport.com, for our latest Tale of the Tape review of 50 Cent's latest album, Animal Ambition. I'll break down that album and tell you what I like, what I don't like, and all that. So please check that out. Also hit us on Twitter, twitter.com/HHSReport. You can always hit us there. Hit us on the website. You can email us at the website. And also, we are now on Facebook, y'all. So hit us on Facebook, facebook.com/HHSReport. And that's how we do it, man. We're expanding this thing. We're getting bigger. But as I was saying, from the hip-hop standpoint, there hasn't been a lot going on the first half of 2014. And I really wanted to sink my teeth into something, man. Something that had some real meaning behind it. And that day is here, man. We finally got something. Total Slaughter is coming. Total Slaughter is taking place this Saturday night in New York City, July the 12th. And I brought on a very special guest to come talk about Total Slaughter and break down the event. And for those of you who don't know, Total Slaughter is being put on by Eminem. And it's kind of like a shady production event, I guess you could say. And he's launching a rap league, I think, is ultimately Eminem's goal with this. But it's going to be an event on Saturday. It's going to be pay-per-view. There's going to be, I believe, the conclusion of the Total Slaughter Tournament, which features some of the hottest battle rap MCs in the game right now. In addition to that, it's going to be what I would consider to be a double main event. Hollow to Don versus Joe Budden, and a rematch between Murder Mook and Loaded Lux. Here to break it all down is our special guest, analyst, if you will, when it comes to rap battles. But this is this guy has been a great influence on my life as a fan of hip hop, and he was one of the first people who helped to taught me about the competition behind hip hop. This was years ago, but I was unfamiliar with the concept of rappers competing against one another on the same track. I didn't really know that was a thing until this guy told me about it. And this is the guy that introduced me to Pac. And when I say introduced me, I don't mean like, you know, he told me who Tupac was because I never heard of him. I knew all about Tupac, but this guy introduced me to Pac. You know what I'm saying? He broke it down, and he explained to me why Tupac is probably the most influential rap artist that we'll ever know. And that gentleman is my cousin, Jay, out of Cleveland, Ohio. Jay, how you feeling this evening?
I'm good, man.
That's all you got to say after that introduction I just gave you?
You're exposing too much right now, man, to the public, man. You're telling them too much about our age.
Well, I was just saying, man, you know, I mean, I just dated a little bit, you know. We're getting up there, I think, you know. But, you know, we'll just leave it at that. We're not young people anymore. I think that's suffice it to say. But we don't have to get into all those semantics. We're here to talk about hip-hop, man. So, again, Total Slaughter is coming up this Saturday. And we've seen over the years a lot of different battle rap leagues try to crop up, you know what I'm saying? We've seen the Rap Olympics years ago, where Eminem first kind of cut his teeth and made a name for himself. And then we saw the Blaze battle. That was like a one-time thing on HBO, and somebody got beat up or something. Something happened. You know how people are. We can never have nice things. Something went down at the Blaze battle, and they never did it again. It was a one-time thing. We never heard from it again. Then we have, like, you know, Fight Club was a show that came out on MTV2 a couple of years ago. That lasted for like maybe a season or two seasons, something like that, and that went away. And then we have all these other YouTube leagues, you know, Grind Time, Smack. Smack DVD's been around for over 10 years, you know. But then we got the Smack thing. We got URL. We got UW. All this other stuff. Total Slaughter's new, man. First of all, Jay, do you think that this event can last? And do you think people will care about this event? And do you think that this league can last and sustain itself?
I definitely think that with Eminem's star power, it will last. I mean, well, and his, you know, money power, really. You know, I mean, he has the money to sustain a league without hurting himself. And he can do it out of love for the culture. So to answer that simply, yes. Yes, I definitely believe that it will grow. It will last. Can there be mistakes made and things of that nature? Obviously, yes. But the good part about it is that, you know, other people have already started laying their own foundation, and no one's leaning on Eminem to support the entire genre, the entire culture. You know, there's competition, friendly competition. So,
yeah, definitely, man. And Eminem, as you said, Eminem has the financial backing to make this thing last. I mean, if there was anybody that could do it from a dollar standpoint, Eminem would certainly do it. Again, I don't know that it will necessarily last, but because we've seen so many of these things kind of just try and fail, or kind of they start off hot and then they kind of fizzle out. And I don't even know if the pay-per-view element is going to pan out. I mean, I think it's a nice attempt. I think it creates some mystique about the event, and it makes people wonder, like, well, maybe this is something I should check out. It's not just something on YouTube. Like, this is a big deal. Do you agree with the pay-per-view element of it?
Absolutely. I mean, numbers don't lie. These guys are getting millions of views, and, you know, if you just sell, you know, I mean, if a Mayweather fight goes for, you know, 1.5 million views or something like that, it's a record breaker. So I definitely think that it's pretty much all on how well the people are kept up to date. So, yes, I definitely think so. I think that, you know, it will definitely do well, even on pay-per-view.
Yes, for sure, man, for sure. Now, the main event of Total Slaughter, and again, in my opinion, there's basically two main events. If you follow battle rap at all, and some people don't, and that should be pointed out. Some people love hip hop, love the music, love the culture, but they just can't get into the battle rap scene. And then you got those people that are such battle rap heads that they can't get into the mainstream scene. You know, anything like that's the least bit commercial, it kind of turns them off. I personally like to fashion myself as somebody who's kind of has a foot in both camps, but or in both worlds, I should say. But and that interestingly enough brings us to Joe Budden, who is a known MC who's been making records in hip hop for over 10 years now. And Joe Budden out of Jersey, man, he's in an interesting spot because he's basically crossing over from the mainstream side, so to speak, back into the battle world. Now, supposedly he has a history of battling, going back, like, when, you know, when he was younger, way younger, high school, whatever, long before he ever, you know, made Pump It Up, nothing like that. But, and now we see him coming back. He's going to be battling Hollow the Don. Now, you and I are both big fans of Hollow the Don. Personally, Hollow is my favorite battle rapper. He's my favorite MC, man, because I think he's so creative and witty and funny. And I think, you know, when you talk about punchlines and delivery, I think the humor element counts for quite a bit, because you can really get the crowd on your side if you say something humorous. And that dude is really funny. So you have that aspect. His rebuttals are on point. His rebuttals are just unparalleled, really, in my opinion. I don't think anybody else comes with off the top rebuttals. I mean, like, he'll just go off of what you just said in your previous verse and then just destroy you with it. Or he'll just come and, you know what I'm saying? He'll say something that you just wouldn't see coming, or he'll make fun of your clothes or whatever, but it'll be hot though. that Joe Budden is not climbing back in the ring against some chump. This is not Mike Tyson versus Peter McNeely. You know what I'm saying? This would be as if Mike Tyson came right in with no tune-up fights going against Evander Holyfield. You know what I mean? And we may be being generous calling Joe Budden Mike Tyson in this format. Do you think Joe Budden can just come cold and right out the mainstream game, making records with Slaughterhouse and all this stuff, walking right into this thing and climb into the cage or into the ring against one of the best battle MCs in the world? I mean, is that a good look for him?
No, it's not a good look for him. It's a good look for the culture. And I think it says a lot about him. And, you know, I definitely commend him because he's going to open the door for other guys in the industry to step out the box and do something new. I mean, it's not new in the sense of, you know, like, it's never been done before, but it's new to the mainstream. You know, they, if mainstream artists start jumping in the ring and, you know, showcasing their talent, then I think that will definitely, their star power will elevate battle rap to heights we would have never thought we would see. I mean, even now, I mean, it's already to that point. I remember when Cassidy and everything was, you know, those little short clips of Cassidy battling here and there, you know, was, you know, that was like a big deal at one point in time. And now I look at it and I think, you know, that was pretty much C average, really, you know. And I don't think that Hollow is the rebuttal king. I think Charlie Clips is, but that's another subject.
And shout out to Charlie Clips, because I rock with Charlie Clips too, man, because, you know, I believe he's a follower of Hip Hop Sports Report on Twitter. So shout out to Clips, man. He's good in my book. And he can rhyme, you know what I mean? So I definitely think he's one of the elite MCs as well. He's not on this card, though. And the other thing with Hollow and Budden in this particular battle is Budden, you know what I'm saying? Joe Budden is one of the most criticized MCs in rap, I feel like. And he's one of those cats that can never gain the approval of the masses no matter what he does. If he spits flames, he's not going to get there. If he does reality TV, he's not going to get there. If he, you know what I'm saying, starts messing with Tahiri and he's got the coldest chick in the game on his arm or whatever, that's, you know, he's going to get criticism for that somehow. He just can't see. He just can't win. It seems like Joe Budden's one of those guys, kind of like Papoose almost. He's one of those guys that just seems to be, you know what I mean, like criticism just flocks to them. So I feel like Hollow's going to have a lot of material to work with going against somebody like Budden, whereas most mainstream people, like I said, unless you follow battle rap, you might not know about Hollow the Don or know his history or know how, you know, he got locked up recently or how Loaded Lux basically clowned him for being a junkie and all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, is Budden kind of opened himself up in a way that, you know, he's at a disadvantage going into this battle?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. But, you know, he also has an advantage because Hollow is, you know, quietly in a slump, lyrically. Loaded Lux said in this battle, you know, you keep giving us old shit, excuse me, but it's the truth. You know, when I hear him going to his schemes, I feel like I've heard it before. You know, and I'm a big fan of his, you know, but Joe Budden has a ruggedness, you know, but, you know, he might lack the energy to carry his point across in a way that is, you know, suitable for the battle rap arena. So there's a lot of advantages and pros and cons to each one of them getting in there and doing their thing. He has the element of surprise. No one knows how he's going to come. You know, he can have a first round KO if he brings, you know, that urgency to his first round. that, you know, will carry over with the crowd. And I'm not even sure about what the crowd is going to be like, or, you know, how many people will be there, what the venue is going to look like, and things of that nature. All of that matters. So
I totally agree. And that's a great point that you made about the venue and all that stuff. I mean, there's certain things about battle, rap battles that just bug the hell out of me. And one of the biggest ones is the crowd. So the crowd has such influence on everything that goes down. Not only the crowd, you know, they can make certain things hot, or they can make certain things entertaining just based off their natural reaction. But a lot of times their reactions can manufacture. Or you see, if one of the MCs brings 50 cats with them, you know, and then the other guy only has like 6 people with them, and then it's not a gassing up everything that their boy says, you know, and the other MC, you know, he might be spitting flames, but it doesn't appear that way just because the crowd has already made up their mind. It's already, you know, decided which way they're gonna, which MC they're gonna rock with. So I think that's very important. I don't know what the venue's gonna look like, how many people are gonna be in attendance, or if they're gonna try to regulate how many people from each camp are welcome. You know, everything that you said is a great point regarding that, and I think it'll kind of set a precedent for how this thing's gonna go in the future, if and when it gets to that. But I noticed you said that you feel like Hollow's scheme, his rhyme scheme, hasn't been up to snuff lately, man. I mean, like, to me, I don't necessarily have as much of a beef with the scheme as long as it's dope. Like, if what he's saying is hot, then I don't know that it matters. But you feel like his scheme has kind of fell off lately?
Yeah, you know, I think that a younger Hollow, his weaknesses when he was younger, I think that they were, I don't know. I think that he's corrected them, but he's fell off on the cool points that he used to have. You know, he used to have like major cool points on stage. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but it's how you carry yourself. You understand? And, I don't know. Something's different about him. You know, it might be overexposure, or I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what it is. But as far as the crowd go, not to bring back to that point, but I myself believe that the crowd are not biased. I mean, that's just my belief. I believe that, you know, usually when you hear oohs and ahs, it's well-deserved. You know, I've seen camps try to, like, amp up the crowd or whatever, you know, and it usually doesn't work. You know, it's like either you're bringing it or you're not. You know, like Dot Mob and all of them, you know, they like to do, you know, ad-libbing and, you know, trying to rev up the crowd. But I'm not exactly one to believe that any of that, you know, sways the crowd one way or another.
Interesting. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see what Bud brings to the table. Like you said, there's some rappers that have kind of made their way up through the battle ranks, like Cassidy, and have this reputation. But Cassidy, I think he's one of them cats that's kind of like, I'm never going back to that world and to that lifestyle unless they really put some major bread up. There's no real incentive for me to do that. And so, but then you see these guys, they might get one album off, and then all of a sudden they're struggling to find that next hit. Cassidy had about 2 albums, I think, were really successful, and then, you know, he's kind of been falling back into obscurity for the most part, unless he's battling Murder Mook, but Meek Mill or somebody. So that's just kind of how it's played itself out. But before we run out of time here, we got to touch on the other main event of the evening, and you know, maybe you see it as a dual main event. I don't know if you see one as the undercard or one as the main event, but, and you've never seen a battle before, just go to YouTube and type in Murder Mook versus Loaded Lux, and go back and watch their battle from like 2003. They're like battling in a city blue or something like that, and they're just throwback jerseys all over the wall, and they're battling each other, and they're young. They look so much younger, man. But they are going at it, man. And both of them brought that heat on that day. I think it was pretty close to a draw. If you twisted my arm, I might say Mook by a nose. But I mean, that was just. It was really a really close battle, but both men were excellent on that day. Now they're going to have a rematch, and We've seen Murder Move battle a lot of cats over the years, but it seems like his activity has kind of dwindled a bit in recent years. I mean, he battled Iron Solomon last year, and Iron Solomon, I think, is pretty good in most instances, but Mook took him apart, you know what I mean? And then and he's had some other battles here and there, but he hasn't been consistently in it like Lux has, who basically never stopped. And then you have Loaded Lux, who considered by many to be the greatest battle rapper of all time. He goes through with these elaborate tales, basically. He's almost telling a story with his approach. And he comes in dressed in full attire. There's a gimmick or a theme to each one of his battles, and he generally sticks to it. He didn't used to do that back in the day, but that's how he approaches it now. Of course, he had the infamous choke incident against Calico either last year or 2 years ago, something like that. But he came back and battled Hollow last year or earlier this year. That was back in January. I thought that was pretty close. But I think you said you believe Lux won. And if I'm not mistaken, Jay, you said that you believe Lux is the GOAT of battle MCs. Do you still feel that way? And why do you feel that way?
Man, Loaded Lux is like otherworldly. Nobody says what he says. Even if you look back at his old battles where, you know, his style was completely different, but his angles weren't. And that's what I feel he brings. I feel he brings angles and wordplay that nobody else is like even thinking about. Some of the most creative battle rappers out here are not nowhere near his lane. Guys like Daylight and, you know, like Charlie Clifton Freestyle and pretty much those are like the only names that really come to my mind when I think about the most creative. Or, B-Magic, excuse me. I don't know if I think of his name. But, yeah, I definitely think that Loaded Lux is the greatest of all time. Easy. His energy, his aggressiveness, and it's not too overstated. He's not just yelling at the top of his lungs and things of that nature. The choke is nothing because you wanted so badly to hear the rest of what he had to say that you would overlook it the moment he got the mic again. Yeah, I definitely think he's untouchable at this point in his career.
What do you think about Murder Mook right now? Again, Mook's kind of been off the scene a little bit. He kind of comes and goes. And again, if there was a Rap Battle Hall of Fame, Murder Mook would be in it without question. And he's battled a lot of respected MCs, including Lux, including Sirius Jones. He battled a Party Artie years ago. You know what I mean? He before he passed away. What do you think of Mook these days? I mean, do you think he still has what it takes to get in there and go blow for blow with one of the best?
Yeah, no, I don't. I think that Murder Mook was reaching against Iron Solomon. He was reaching. Oh my God, he was reaching. He was all over the place. You know, it's bars over names now, and Murder Mook's bars are kind of outdated. Actually, he didn't even bring any bars against Iron Solomon, so I don't know if he still has it. I know he used to have bars, but I don't know if he has bars anymore. What is he going to talk about? You know, what is each of them going to talk about? Because they're very tight, as far as my understanding. They are cool. They're both from Harlem. It's not going to be the same kind of battle it was back in the day. Loaded Lux is a lot calmer now. It seemed like back then they were just so energized and so into what they were saying. And it did not seem as if they were prepared for one another. Now it's going to be a whole different thing with Loaded Lux having time to prepare, you know, and almost as if he's going into surgery. And you know what I mean? He really is going to dissect Murder Mook on stage. And I don't think Murder Mook with the way he dissected Iron Solomon can approach this battle the same way. Now, maybe he didn't bring his A game against Iron Solomon, but I really don't think he has much ammo against Loaded Lux.
Well, there's one other element to the event, and I believe it's this tournament that was taking place. I think you may have pointed out to me before we started recording that it may not, in fact, be called a Total Slaughter tournament, but it's an 8-man tournament featuring the likes of Disaster, Matt Hoffa, Daylight, Arsenal, Big T, A-Verb, Marv One, and T-Rex, who I believe replaced Cortez. And so I don't know how the Total Slaughter people are actually putting it together. It sounds like that the tournament may have already been taking place, and they've dwindled it down to the final two, and they're going to perform the night of the pay-per-view. That's how my understanding of it. And I'm not even sure if we know who's in the championship or if they've released that information, but I know you've been keeping up with it online, on the Total Slaughter's, website, and they have YouTube videos, and they basically turn it into a reality show, and these guys are battling all the time, basically, and they're living with each other, I think, and it's this whole thing. Give me your take quickly on just what you've seen within that tournament element, with what you've seen, who's impressed you from that group, who's disappointed you, that kind of stuff.
Wow. Well, there were only three rappers that kind of really brung it, and that's Disaster, in no specific order. Disaster, T-Rex, and Daylight. Daylight won. But those three guys, I don't recall seeing choke. And T-Rex actually impressed me, and I'm not a big T-Rex fan. Of course, he deserves all the respect in the world for what he's done. But, you know, I'm just not a big T-Rex fan. So, but he definitely brung his A game. I was like, wow, you know, this guy was biting heads off and making people choke. And that's just the truth. But Daylight is something special, too. Daylight really showed that he is a notch above. I've read a lot of criticism about Daylight online and his antics and whatever the case may be. I don't care. When that boy spit, it's fire. You know, and his metaphors, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, they're like nothing you ever heard. And the way he formats it and everything, it's right on point. And he doesn't choke. So, you know, I got to give all the respect in the world to Daylight.
Interesting. Now, I'm not as familiar with Daylight. I am familiar with T-Rex. I don't like T-Rex either. Not because he can't rhyme. I just can't stand his personality, frankly, and the way he used to D-Rod Murder Move back in the day just really put me off, you know. It was insane back in the day. And I don't know if they're still tight like that. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. I assume they are. But maybe they're related. I don't know. But the way that T-Rex used to behave during Mook battles, like, it's just like, all right, man, knock it off, you know. But, again, he can't rhyme. And there were some other cats in that grouping, like Arsenal, who's been around forever, it seems like. A-Verb, who I like A-Verb, but he's highly inconsistent, in my opinion. I think he has talent, but he doesn't bring that same intensity to the battle every single time. And Arsenal is a little bit of the same way. And so, it'll be interesting to see where their careers go from here. Like, because like I said, these guys were kind of thrown in the mix, but who knows, man, Total Slaughter, they might turn this into like a UFC thing. And it's like a monthly event on pay-per-view. I think it's $20 the pay-per-view, by the way. But I think, you know, they might turn it into like a monthly thing, and maybe you'll see turn into headliners, you know? Appreciate you coming on the show tonight, man. Because we're recording this. I don't think I mentioned this. We're recording this on Monday night, July the 7th. And yeah, man, anything else you wanted to get off the chest before we got out of here?
Arsenal also showed up. I didn't mention his name, but Arsenal definitely showed up. And Arsenal, to me, is one of the more consistent guys who has multiple styles that he can bring. And I think he's really underrated also. But, you know, he has his own league now and everything, so he's doing well. And I don't know. As far as the pay-per-view and things of that nature, I think that they are going to have to do better with creating more of a buzz and letting people know when and where and, you know, things of that nature. They need to release more trailers. You know, all the other leagues are, like, dropping trailers before battles, and it helps. You know, it builds anticipation. But I haven't seen any trailers for any of the battles that are supposed to be coming up. So I think that's bad promoting.
Yeah. And I think I did. I think I feel like I've seen like one promo video for one of the main events. I don't even remember which one it was. But even to your point, like that's not enough. Like there should have been multiple trailers for each of the battles. They should have been building this from weeks out, you know, or from months out, because this is a unique event.
Very. Very. They should have been building up Murder Mook, you know, Return to the Ring, Loaded Lux, you know, I mean, Hollow the Don. I mean, come on. You know, this should be a very big deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. As long as Matt Hoffa don't steal off on anybody, I think it'll be a great show. And then hopefully the Mook and Lux battle lives up to the first one, because I think that that's going to be something that people are going to do, regardless of whether it's fair or not. Everybody's going to be comparing it to the first battle 10, 11 years ago, whenever that was. And we don't want like a Roy Jones, Bernard Hopkins situation where like they were great back in their day when they were both young and hungry. And now they're just, you know, it's more so about collecting a check and maybe they're past their prime, that kind of stuff. You know, both, like you said, they both brought a lot of energy back then. And now they're a lot older. They're a lot more sophisticated in their approach. It feels like they're more tactical. There's less energy. And I don't know. It'll just be interesting to see how it all plays out.
You know, I really feel like Loaded Lux is the one that need to be battling a mainstream artist. Not Hollow. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Hollow cool, man, but Loaded Lux is the man. You don't need to be going backwards to Murder Mook. Murder Mook, you know, yeah, Murder Mook is that dude making $40,000 a battle too, you know, but really, seriously, man, nah. Nah, not at all. It need to be Murder Mook jumping in there, biting off Busta Rhymes' head, or, you know, anybody
else. You mean Lux?
Yeah, Lux, sorry. Yeah, definitely Lux. It is what it is. Hollow is Hollow. Hollow got his cred. You know, he got his stripes. He is who he is, you know.
Well, you know what I like, man? I like the fact that Hollow he's not afraid of anybody. He's battled everybody, and he's taken L. You know what I'm saying? But he still comes back, and to me, he's still the most entertaining cat out there. And I think that's why they put him up against Budden, because he's entertaining. And he's the most box office cat out of all of them, you know?
Yeah. You know, one thing that bothers me about him, his only weakness is that screechy, you know, I'll fucking rip you, and rip his shirt, all that stuff, man. You know, everybody has talked about him for it. But Loaded Lux really, really made him seem like a boy. You know what I'm saying? Like, why your voice be climbing when you rhyme it? Hitting pitch like a Yankees bench. You know what I'm saying? Like he hit him with some body blows, man, when he was talking about how he be bringing the same shit over and over again. And he do, you know, like that. I can put him in the sky and let the sky tell. There's two ways I can send them messages, man. That's old, man. He did the same type of scheme against the Goods.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody ain't like really memorizing these lines and all of that, man. But some of these guys, man, they be recycling.
Yeah, Mook used to be guilty of that too. He used to not even like try to disguise it. He used to just straight recite the same line over again in a different battle back, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, or whatever.
back in the early Smack era.
Yeah, exactly. He used to just straight up, like, I don't even know if it was all Smack stuff. It would just be battles that he was on, and like, it would just pop up, things would just pop up, you know, and then he would just straight up just be using the same stuff. I'm not even sure that there wasn't a YouTube video that was dedicated to him recycling. I think there was at one point. Jay, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us this evening, man. We appreciate it.
No problem, man.
All right, man. One.
What? The police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up. Suppress the revolution, a premeditated scheme. Introduce a drug called crack to us ghetto teens. Got a lot of raw niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us bleeding with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I wrote this. Got these devils petrified. Hiding from my hopeless focus. And so I learned to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click the military minds. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradox. Thugged out and drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving 5 rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit stick, we block hits. When my Glock sticks, all hell, I don't bail. Wrath up to apocalypse. Forever ghetto necessary, picture food stamps. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food.
We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block is back. We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block is back. Where my soldiers is at, where my soldiers is at. Where the fuck my soldiers at, where my soldiers is at.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, are you with me? See the war is the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's deceased. Organize the streets in time, yeah, these devils petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers in penitentiary jail, damn. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's a thug's wrath. Political contracts and bloodbaths. From a Tulu Shakur up in the Rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me, the struggle continued.
Now if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something that was that tough, all right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Now, you may have noticed as you were listening to that interview with Jay, again, thank you for joining the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. You may have noticed there was a little bit of a difference, something that happened right during that interview. Initially, you heard me behind the mic, as usual. And then all of a sudden, a little bit into it, I was no longer on the mic. This is what happens with podcasts from time to time. You come across technical difficulties and things transpire. And I apologize for that. It was beyond my control. But something happened and I just had to, I wasn't able to capture my recording on the microphone, so we had to just go all with the telephone conversation there. So hopefully that wasn't too strenuous on you guys' ears out there, because I know how much you love hearing my voice behind the magnificent mic, and we didn't get to do that for that interview, but we still got the interview, and it still turned out really great. And speaking of podcasting in general, shout out again to the Sunday Old School Podcast. They're on iTunes, as is the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. So go subscribe, rate, and comment on both podcasts, Hip Hop Sports Report and the Sunday Old School Podcast, Old School spelled with a K. I was on their podcast recently, and we discussed Scarface. It was a fantastic experience. Thank you, Cray Allred and Sam Bennett, for having me on that podcast. It was fantastic. I really enjoyed my time there. I should point out that the only thing that I did that I regretted from that interview was we started talking about Cleveland hip hop, and obviously this is something that's kind of, you know, is important to me. And interestingly, I started listing off MCs from the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, and I started rattling off these names of all these obscure artists that never really caught on and never really got hot, or maybe they were hot for just a nanosecond and then fell off. totally neglecting Kid Cudi, Machine Gun Kelly, and King Chip. So anybody that hears that interview and is now hearing this podcast, I just want you guys to know that I'm not a moron. Just give me a mulligan on that one. I just happened to forget those guys in the moment for whatever reason. But I was beating myself up over it after the fact, and so I just had to get that off my chest. And so now we'll continue on with this podcast, and I'm going to pray that I don't have any recording issues from here on out. But the subject of the day in the world of sports, LeBron James. LeBron James, y'all, he may be coming back to Cleveland. Now, you may recall that we mentioned that on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast the last time we were on the air, actually going back to May when we had the Cleveland Show edition that I recorded in Cleveland. I mentioned that I believe LeBron wanted to come back and that his family wanted to come back, but that didn't necessarily mean that he would. The last time I talked to you guys, which was just before the draft, we had Mark Hicks on for the Mark Draft, and I mentioned that, again, the same thing. I just reiterated that LeBron, in my opinion, wanted to come back, and that within 2 weeks from that day, the 22nd, LeBron James could be a Cavalier again. That was not out of the realm of possibility. Well, it's July 7th, and here we are. All the signs are indicating that LeBron James is coming back, y'all. And you may not believe that. There's a lot of Miami people that don't want to believe that. There's media people like Dan Le Batard, who has been flying off the handle on TV and radio all day today, but almost defiant in his belief that this ain't over till it's over, that Pat Riley's still the man, he's going to pull some strings, pull a rabbit out of a hat, or do something, and everything's going to work out for the Heat's favor. And he might not be wrong. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a quick second, and I'm going to run down the indicators, all the signs, all of the everything that we should take from this current situation with LeBron and compare it to 2010 when he left Cleveland. So if you look at the timeline, when LeBron left Cleveland, it all started with the 2008 Olympics, or so we believe, right? Adrian Wojnarowski had that big write-up. He talked about how LeBron and Wade and Bosh were on the Olympic team together and started fantasizing about playing together in the NBA. That's how it started. Then all three of those guys are in concert. They take the 3-year extension instead of taking the 5-year extension, right? And that was even before that, actually. That was actually 06 when they took that 3-year extension. Then they all talked about this at the Olympics. So this goes back all the way to 2006, y'all. Now, fast forward to 2009, roughly, 2008, 2009, 2010, the Cavaliers are struggling to bring in high-profile free agents. Guys like Trevor Ariza, guys like Ron Artest, guys that, you know, I didn't particularly think would necessarily help the Cavs a ton, but there were still high-profile free agent names regardless, and they were brought in, and they were offered the same contract they were getting other places. And they turned the Cavs down. Why? Because when they asked the organization and when they asked LeBron James, are you going to be here beyond 2010, there was no straight answer. LeBron was non-committal, and it's really difficult to build a team when the superstar is non-committal. That's what we found. And so those guys turned down the Cavs. They went elsewhere. Moving right along, LeBron James consistently stoking the free agent flames, right? Never putting an end to the rumors and to the speculation that he might bounce on the Cavs at the end of the 2010 season. He was embracing it. He loved it. Then you had the end of the 2009 season, which in my opinion was the nail in the coffin that LeBron was leaving. I believe that after the 09 season, LeBron had all but made up his mind that he was going to leave. Now, again, this is just my opinion, y'all. Just my opinion. But the way that season ended, LeBron was so motivated that we were going to win the championship that year. And if you recall, that was the year that the Cavaliers were dancing in the huddles and stuff and taking pictures and pregame and all that stuff. The 09 Cavaliers is one of my favorite single season teams ever. And they led the league in wins. They won about 66 games, I believe. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They rolled through the first two rounds of the playoffs. They came across a bad matchup against Orlando, and nobody showed up to play outside LeBron. LeBron played out of his mind, averaged about 38 points, 9 boards, and 8 assists, something like that, through 6 games. But Dwight Howard played the best basketball of his life. Hedo Turkoglu and Rashawn Lewis played the best basketball of their life. Rafer Alston played the best basketball of his life, way better than anything he did on the N1 tour. And Mike Brown made some of the most horrible coaching decisions and lack of adjustments that I've ever seen in a series. And you add it all up and the Cavaliers lost. And I think LeBron was really deeply hurt by that. Following year, they bring in Shaq through a trade. But I think LeBron's mind was already made up that he was going out the door. And I think he knew that he could not win a championship in 2010 and then leave. Right? I think he wanted to leave, but he knew he couldn't win the title and leave because he maintained all along that he was all about winning. And so if he win the title, how can he walk away from a championship team? So I believe that he did throw in the towel on the 2010 Cavs. And specifically, we all remember the Game 5 against Boston in Cleveland where he just... I've never seen a game quite like that, at least until the 2011 finals from him. But, I thought that he basically had quit in that game. And even before that, he had the weird stuff with his elbow. He's taking lefty free throws in a playoff game. Just all kinds of weird stuff that didn't make any sense, right? Then he goes all, and after the Game 5 against Boston, he sits there in Cleveland and says to the media that the Cleveland fans are spoiled. Next thing you know, he's holding a decision. And the decision is televised. It's not held in Cleveland. It's not held in Akron. But it's held in Connecticut for some reason. I guess because it's near ESPN. I don't know why. And they had it at the Boys and Girls Club, which was nice. And they donated proceeds to that, supposedly, which is great. But people got a little caught up in that because my thing was that was just a mask used to camouflage the decision that he was not only bailing on his franchise, but he was crapping on his hometown in the process and his home region in the process, and he was doing them dirty on national TV. You know, I mean, that to me, that's what that was. That was just a cover, the whole Boys and Girls Club thing, and people bought into it. Like, oh, he's such a great guy. Oh, LeBron, he's such a great guy. Look at him, he's donating money to the kids. It's like LeBron had $90 million before he was 19 years old. If he wanted to help the Boys and Girls Club, he just cut a check. He didn't need to do all that. He didn't need to have this big spectacle on television to help the Boys and Girls Club. That wasn't necessary. He did that as a cover to cover his ass. That's just my opinion. Again, my opinion. Then you had the Dan Gilbert letter, right? And it looked like all bridges were burned for in perpetuity, you know? And again, the Gilbert letter was not a good look. It was in poor taste by Dan Gilbert. But as a Cavaliers fan and as a Clevelander, I appreciated it because no one was ever sticking up for us. And he was sticking up for his best interest, which was the fans and the people of Cleveland. So I can't really blame him for that. He could have maybe found a better way to do it. But again, I understand why he did it. And as a Cavaliers fan on that night, I was happy to read it. And so that kind of was the timeline of his departure from Cleveland. Now, if you bring it forward to his time in Miami, the timeline of his return, perhaps. LeBron comes to Miami. He embraces the villain role. He says he wants to be the villain. He says he's okay with being the bad guy. He's like Tony in Scarface, where he says, you guys don't have the guts to be who you want to be. So you all point the finger at me. Well, say goodnight to the bad guy. No, there was none of that. He tried to be the bad guy. It didn't work. Just like that Tony Montana accent that I just tried. It didn't work at all. So then, but he was the bad guy in December on December 2nd, 2010, at Quicken Loans Arena when he dropped 38 on the Cavaliers and embarrassed the team even further. Which again, and I can't underscore that enough. The fact that when LeBron left, my biggest gripe with it was not the fact that he left, because he always was entitled to leave. But it was the fact that, A, he embarrassed the team on TV. But beyond that, he wrecked the franchise on his way out the door. Every move that was made with him in mind. Presumably, he signed off on all those moves that the Cavaliers made. All those trades, you know, all that stuff. We could never land a big free agent. Michael Redd, Ray Allen turned us down. Artest Ariza turned us down. And they're turning down the Cavs because they did not have that commitment from LeBron. They never got that commitment from him. So you always knew that the possibility of him leaving was there. And then we take on all these old contracts, all these old ball players with these huge, heavy contracts, Ben Wallace, Shaquille O'Neal, and these guys. It hamstrung the franchise. There was no flexibility possible. And then he just walks out the door without the job being finished. And so it took a year for Chris Grant to tear all that stuff down, you know? But getting back to Miami, he lights up the Cavaliers in December 2010. He ends up going to the finals, obviously, and he didn't win the first year, but he would subsequently win the title, and would end up winning two titles with Miami, as we know. And he went to the finals four straight years. So you can't say that it was really a bad decision because he got what he wanted. He wanted a championship and he got two of them. So you can't really knock him there. However, there was a point where LeBron started to show a little bit of remorse, and he started to show a little contrition, and he softened his tone a bit. He realized that the black hat did not suit him. We know he likes to be liked, or at least that's what it appears. And then there was two things that took place between 2011 and 2012. One was after he defeated the Boston Celtics in the playoffs with Dwayne Wade and Bosh, and Miami moved on to the conference finals and beat Chicago. They defeated the Celtics, and LeBron apologized to Cleveland. Do y'all remember that? Take a listen.
It was a lot, you know, with deciding to be here and the way it, you know, panned out with all the friends and the family and the fans back home. And I apologize for the way it happened.
He apologized to Cleveland. That's what he did. Take that as the fans, the organization. I don't know how you want to take it, but whatever it was, he apologized, right? That was in May of 2011. Then in February of 2012, he had something very interesting to say at a shoot-around before a Miami Heat game in Cleveland against the Cavs. Now, a lot of people don't remember this. I remember it vividly. Why? Because I was there. I was right there standing next to LeBron James when he said this. And I don't like to play this card a lot, but I was in the room standing next to him recording this interview when he said this.
I don't know. I mean, I think it would be great. I mean, it would be fun. To play in front of these fans again. You know, I had a lot of fun times. Like I said, my 7 years here. But you can't predict the future. Hopefully I'll continue to stay healthy. You know, I'm here as a Miami Heat player, and I'm happy where I am now. But I don't rule that out in no sense. And if I decide to come back, hopefully the fans would accept me.
So, I mean, he wants the fans to accept him, and he would not rule out coming back. I'll never forget that. And it was moments later they were talking about that on SportsCenter. And this is in 2012, y'all. So it didn't appear LeBron was totally resigned to the fact of coming back. One thing I forgot to mention in the Cleveland timeline, and then I'm just jumping all over now, was that LeBron was in Miami when he announced that he was going to change his number to number 6 the following season. And nobody really put it together at the time, but he was in Miami after a game against the Heat, and he said, as a member of the Cavs, he was going to change his number to number 6 the following year. Which was odd, right? But he was going to Miami, where number 23 is retired. The Heat retired Michael Jordan's number 23. Don't tell me that this wasn't premeditated all along, y'all. He didn't make up his mind that he was leaving Cleveland in June or July of 2010. He already knew. But anyways, hopefully I don't go out of order anymore. LeBron said that, you know, he would like to come back and or maybe consider coming back. He wouldn't rule it out, and he would hope the fans would accept him and all that stuff. He went on to say that Dan Gilbert made some mistakes with the letter, but that he had made some mistakes too. And we saw Dan Gilbert also, lay off LeBron a little bit. We saw him, he was more open to LeBron coming back, it seemed like. There was the Zydrunas Ilgauskas retirement ceremony that took place earlier this year. LeBron was invited. LeBron was in the queue while Dan Gilbert was in the queue. Nobody died. Nobody got cut. Nobody got stabbed. Nothing. None of that. So the reconciliation between those two guys seemed to have been forming. Then you have this season for Miami. They make it back to the finals for a fourth straight year, and then they get obliterated by the Spurs in the finals. And that series was not close. And Dwayne Wade played like a man who was 32 years old going on 42 years old. And we saw Chris Bosh fade away. And when I mean fade away, I mean he literally faded away. Every game he's getting further and further from the basket, taking more and more three-pointers, grabbing less and less rebounds. And LeBron is doing all the work. No help from Chalmers, no help from Cole, no help from Ray Allen, the bench guys, nobody. It was LeBron, and he was by himself, right? He had the little cramp episode, fans are getting on him, and then the Heat basically get killed in 5 games, and what? Now we have LeBron during the season, even before this, during the season, LeBron sends out a tweet or an Instagram photo of him wearing a Cleveland Browns hat where he says, shout out to my man Joe Hayden. I just knew that was going to get national attention, but it didn't for whatever reason. It flew under the radar. Then just this past week, after the season ended, he's tweeting about how he wishes he was in Cleveland so he could go to his boy's birthday party. His wife Savannah sends out the little home sweet home message with a big star by Akron, Ohio, talking about home sweet home and how it's so good to go home or whatever. Now, granted, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but, you know, LeBron is a savvy guy. I think he knows what Savannah was doing by posting that. Like, he has to have some type of self-awareness to the point that he knows that by her posting that, it's going to incite all sorts of innuendo and rumors and things of that nature. And did I forget to mention Johnny Manziel? Hello. Johnny Football gets drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Manziel and LeBron are great friends. We saw LeBron rocking a Manziel Browns jersey like the day after the draft. And not to mention the fact that Manziel is represented by LeBron's agency. So you have that going on. So there's a connection there on the business and a friendship level. Then you have Pat Riley calling out LeBron James, saying that, in the most hypocritical statement of all time, that if you're a real man or a real warrior or whatever, you'll stick it out through the tough times and all this other nonsense that he was trying to spin. He's just a spin doctor, that guy. I mean, Pat Riley's great at what he does, don't get me wrong, but that was the most hypocritical piece of garbage I've ever heard in my life, because he's basically saying that you don't quit when the job's halfway done, or when the going gets tough, you don't quit and run out the door to the next team as a free agent, which is exactly how he recruited LeBron and Bosh in the first place. I couldn't even believe he had the balls to say that, but he did. And then supposedly he meets with Heat management, LeBron does, and they ask him to take a pay cut after everything he did. They ask him to take a pay cut. LeBron says, to hell with this. He opts out of his contract. Something that everybody said before was, oh, well, LeBron is obviously going to opt in for this last year of his deal, at least, if not sign a long-term extension with the Heat. That was the prevailing wisdom at the end of the season. He's either going to opt in for 1 year or he's going to sign a long-term extension. Nobody was saying LeBron's going to opt out of his contract. Then he opts out of his contract, and then everybody in the national media says, oh, well, of course he opted out. That's what he should have done. We all knew he was going to do that. No, you didn't. Stop lying. You didn't say that last week. And then he opts out, and everybody acts like they knew what was up. Now there's even speculation that LeBron is going to wear number 32. As we talked about the number thing before, now there's speculation that LeBron is going to wear 32 when he returns to Cleveland. Now there's rumors that Zydrunas Ilgauskas is flying on Dan Gilbert's private jet down to South Beach last night. Now there's rumors that Rich Paul, LeBron's agent, who supposedly was never on board with LeBron going to Miami in the first place, is pushing for LeBron to come to Cleveland, and that he's telling Dan Gilbert and David Griffin, the general manager, to get your affairs in order so you can make room for a maximum contract proposal to LeBron. So there's all these things, man. All these signs. Like, just put the puzzle together. That's what I like to do. I just like to look at the pieces, survey the landscape, and piece together the puzzle. I'm not saying this is a done deal. I'm not saying that this is a done deal. But every indication says LeBron's leaving. LeBron made it known that you need to improve this roster, Pat Riley, or I am out of here, because Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are not cutting it. That's what we believe, anyway, what was said by LeBron to Pat Riley and Heat management. Well, what has Pat Riley done? Allegedly, he met with a lot of big-name guys like Luol Deng and Pau Gasol, but he can't bring those guys in because those guys don't know that LeBron's going to commit for the long term, so they don't want to commit to Miami. It's the same thing that was happening in Cleveland 4 years ago, y'all. They can't get these big free agents to come in because they don't know if the star is committed. The star has to be committed first, and he's not committed. In fact, he's the opposite of committed. He opted out altogether. He said, no, I'm not re-upping with this. I'm not even signing back on for the one-year thing just yet. So what happens? Miami's forced to go out and get Josh McRoberts and Danny Granger. Danny Granger, who has a history of beefing with LeBron for years in the Central Division, always trash-talking him, scrapping with him and stuff during games. Josh McRoberts, who almost took LeBron's head off during the playoffs, right? That's who they brought in. Oh, and Shabazz Napier. The 6-foot-nothing point guard, late first-round pick out of UConn, that stayed in school for 4 years. That's the guy that Miami broke their neck to get on draft night, and they brought him in, and then all of a sudden LeBron's supposed to just come back. Even Brian Windhorst, who on ESPN, I love Brian Windhorst. I've been following him for years from when he was in Cleveland. Brian Windhorst got on TV and said, I think the Heat won the draft because they went out and got Shabazz Napier. Really? Really? You think that rookie point guard? I mean, LeBron said he likes Shabazz's game and all that. I understand that. But do you really think that rookie point guard from UConn, who was a four-year player there, is going to be the reason why LeBron stays? Come on, man. He left Cleveland. He left the only home he's ever known for Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. That's a multiple-time All-Star and a Finals MVP. You think he's going to stay for Shabazz Napier? Come on, man. That doesn't make any sense. And people are just, I don't know, man. The writing is on the wall. The writing is on the wall. And I feel like LeBron knew he messed up, and he's always wanted to make amends. And I believe that he knows that he tried to, whether intentionally or not, create this division between Cleveland and Akron. That he felt like that somehow he was, when he left Cleveland, that he was not leaving Akron at the same time. And he always went back and said, oh, I love Akron, Ohio. That's my home. But he had no love for Cleveland. So he made it seem like he left Cleveland in the lurch intentionally, but he never left Akron. And it doesn't work like that. There's a lot of Cavs fans in Akron, Ohio. So I think he's aware of that. I think he wants to make it right. And again, all the signs are indicating that he's coming back. And I'll tell you this much, to spin it forward real quick before we get out of here. If he comes back, it's the greatest story we've seen, right? If he doesn't come back, just think of the vitriol, and just think of the animosity that the Cavalier fan base is going to believe, because they're reading the tea leaves too. They're seeing all of these little nuggets of information just adding up, just like I just laid them out to you guys. Cavs fans are seeing all of that, even the ones that want him back, which I'm not really one of them, but they're seeing all that stuff. For LeBron to then say, nah, I was just playing, I'm staying with the Heat, fans will be livid all over again. I don't think he wants that. I don't think he wants that. He gave the Heat four great years. He got them to four straight finals. He got them two NBA championships. I think he's ready to come back. I think he's done what he set out to do when he went to Miami. And I think he's ready to come back. I don't know what kind of contract he's going to sign. I don't know if he's going to sign something long term or if it's going to be something short term. I feel like that when he, the star player, signs a short term deal, it only serves to hurt the franchise, as we've seen from his Cleveland days before. You're not doing the team or the franchise any favors as far as maneuverability is concerned, because you're not committing long term. Some people believe, I heard Bill Simmons say today, that LeBron should only sign a two-year extension with whoever he signs with. But he's just going to create all this hysteria for the next 2 years again. Like, you're not doing your team any favors by not locking up for the long haul. So we'll see what he does, y'all. I don't know. I just, it's hard for me to envision a scenario where he doesn't come back right now. And it will be the greatest story we've seen. I've maintained all along that this is a two-horse race between Cleveland and Miami, and that Cleveland is a better basketball situation for LeBron James. It makes no sense for him to go out west into that bloodbath out there. Stay in the east where it's easy. The road is much easier. You get a chance to go home, make amends with your people, and be the hero again. And play with a young all-star in Kyrie Irving, who just got locked up to an extension. You got Andrew Wiggins. You have the pieces in place that could potentially result in a deal for somebody like Kevin Love. It makes all the sense in the world to go back to Cleveland as opposed to staying in Miami with the broken down Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, who's batting his eyes at the Houston Rockets right now. That's all I got, y'all. I think he's coming back. I can't guarantee it, but I think it's happening. And you know what? If he comes back, I mean, they're going to be playing the songs from the rooftops. Just listen to the chorus of this record, y'all. Diddy, like, saw into the future and knew that LeBron was coming back, I think, and that this is the perfect song for it. I don't know, man. I'm just a guy with a microphone. Thank you for joining us this evening. The Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, we're on iTunes. Please like and subscribe and rate our podcast. Please hit up the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Hit us on Twitter at HHSReport. And on Facebook, facebook.com/HHS Report. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the love and support. Thank you, Jay, for joining us. Please check out Total Slaughter, y'all. Let me know what you think. And I'll highlight my peoples later. I love you guys. Peace. I hear the tears of a clown.
I hate that song. I always feel like they talking to me when it comes on.
Come on.
Another day, another dawn. Another Keisha, nice to meet you, get the math, I'm gone.
Go.
What am I supposed to do when the club lights come on? It's easy to be pumped, but it's harder to be shown. What if my twins ask why I ain't married a mom?
Why?
Damn, how do I respond? What if my son stares with a face like my own and says he wants to be like me when he's grown? Shit, but I ain't finished grown. Another night, the inevitable prolong. Another day, another dawn.
Come on.
Just tell Keisha and Teresa I'll be better in the morning. Another lot that I carry on. I need to get back to the place I belong.
I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
I'm coming home.
Tell the world that I'm coming home.
Yeah.
Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday.
Ain't no
I know
pain.
My kingdom awaits and they're forgiven.
Thank
I'm
you.
Coming home.
Coming home.
Coming home.
Coming home.
Yeah. I'm coming.
Hey yo, check this
home.
Out. A house is not a home. I hate this song. Is a house really a home when your loved ones is gone?
No.
And niggas got the nerve to blame you for it. And you know you would've took the bullet if you saw
right.
it. But you felt it and still feel it. And money can't make up for it or conceal it. But you deal with it and you keep ballin'.
That's right.
Awesome looking playboy and we keep ballin'. Baby, we've been living in sin. Cause we've been really in love, but we've been living as friends.
Yeah.
So you've been a guest in your own home. It's time to make your house your home. Pick up
I'm
the phone.
Coming
pick up
home. Home. I'm coming home. Tell the world that I'm coming home.
I'm coming home.
Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday. I know my kingdom awaits and they've forgiven my mistakes.
Thank
I'm coming home.
Coming
I'm
home.
Coming
Home. Yeah, ain't no stopping us now. I love that song. Whenever it comes on, it makes me feel strong. I thought I told y'all that we won't stop. Till we back cruising through Harlem. These old blocks is what made me, saved me, drove me crazy. Drove me away, then embraced me, forgave me for all of my shortcomings. Welcome to my homecoming. Yeah, it's been a long time.
I'm coming home.
Whoa.
I'm coming home.
Oh.
Tell the world that I'm coming home.
I'm coming home.
Coming home.
Coming home.
Tell the world.
Coming home.